take it from here. Don't go away when you can take it from here. Why don't you stay and maybe join in the fun? Now the show has begun.
Half an hour of laughter beckons every minute, pack the second.
Yes, join the chorus, Dick Bentley and Professor Jimmy Edwards are in session again and fully booked for the next 30 minutes. Also on hand are Wallace Eaton, Alan Dean, and the keynote. And Frank Cantell is here with the augmented review orchestra. So if you've got half an hour, more or less, clear.
Hello. Hello? That you, Bentley? I'm ringing you up to tell you that a dreadful thing has happened.
Yes.
Listen carefully. I've got a baby. What? That's not amusing at all, Bentley. I volunteered to look after the baby for the people next door. It's David Dunhill's new baby, you know. What? Oh, yes, he's quite quiet at the moment. They said if he cried, I was to lift him out of the cot and throw him over my shoulder. Yes, I did. He didn't half hit the wall with a bang. But it's quietened him down quite a bit. For heaven's sake, get Joy and come over here immediately. Yes, number 24, the drive.
This is number 24, Dick. Ring the bell. Why are these people using Jimmy as a sitter?
I know, Joy. They should have consulted me. I have a whole address book full of babysitters.
Well, what do you want with babysitters?
Who do you think sits with the babysitter when the babysitter sits with the baby?
Well, you know, it seems strange to leave a tiny baby in Jimmy's care. Suppose he wants his bottle.
Oh, surely Jimmy can do without a drink for one evening. the door is opening.
Oh, thank goodness you're here. Come through, but for heaven's sake, don't make a noise. The little beast has got ears like a hawk. He can hear a loud sigh at 30 paces.
Oh, so that's the little darling. Oh, look, Joy, curled up in the armchair. But he's a bit young to have whiskers, isn't he?
Dick, that's a teddy bear. Oh. Can't we have a peep at the baby, Jimmy?
He's over in the cot here in a drunken stupor. I laced his gripe water with rum essence. Just listen to him.
Oh, Dick, come over to the cot and look. Isn't it the sweetest little thing you ever saw?
Ah, yes. You know, they turn them out by machinery in America. It's a very interesting process. It's
not the cot, the baby.
Oh.
How old is he, Jimmy?
Oh, I don't know. I suppose it should be easy enough to tell. A fellow showed me how to do it with horses. You just put your finger in his mouth and feel his teeth. I think I'll try it. I get my finger in like this, and then... Oh! Clumsy top!
Oh, look. He's smiling in his sleep. Look at his face next to Dick. So smooth and innocent and sweet-smelling.
That's because I use aftershave lotion. I take care of my...
Oh, Bentley, you've woken him up. Oh, what did you do?
I didn't do anything. He was all uncovered. I just took his thumb out of his mouth and pushed it back down his sleeve.
Bentley, that was his toe. Now you've done it. It takes hours to get him to sleep. I had to read him a story.
Well, haven't either of you got a story on you?
So I've got a magazine in my back pocket. Let's see. Oh, here's a good page. Listen. She felt his hot breath on her cheek as his arms went round her...
Oh, Dick! Can't understand Paris romance tales.
Well, I don't understand it myself, but the advertisements are fun.
No, Bentley, we'll just have to pick him up. There now. Who's Uncle Jim Jim's peaky weeky licky perishing horror?
Come on, old Mother Edwin. We'll take him in here and make him comfortable. Now, just lay on my lap like a good little boy.
I'm not going to lay on your lap.
Oh, I'm talking to the baby. Oh, he's all uncomfortable, isn't he? You know if his parents wanted him changed?
Well, with that face, I shouldn't think anybody else would have him.
Well, I'll do it. Jimmy, where do they keep his spares? Are they in the kitchen?
No, I think the kitchen's been used for some sort of celebration. It's festooned with white flags strung across it.
Well, you go and get one of those flags.
Right.
And bring in the talcum. Dick, have you got a safety pin on you?
Well, I have, but I can't pass it across to you.
Why not?
The moment I remove it, I have to keep both hands in my pocket.
Here you are, Joy. Here's the stuff from the kitchen.
Oh, thank you, Jimmy. Oh, and the talcum soon. That's it. Now the safety pin. Yes. He's all nice and comfy. I think he should be put down. Did they tell you how to do it, Jimmy?
No, but I looked up put down in the dictionary. It means to be painlessly exterminated by a vet. I'm all in favor.
Oh, you're useless. I'll put him back in his cot myself. There. Good night, little fella. And may you be as comfortable and happy all your life as you are now.
I doubt it, Joy. Things are going to be pretty rough for him from now on.
Pretty rough? Why?
That wasn't talcum. It was scouring powder.
Here comes the sergeant.
Good night.
Good night.
Thank you, Keynote. That was really restful, and I need some rest. You know, Joy, when I woke up this morning, my bed was all splintered, and my nose was terribly sore.
Well, how did that happen?
I dreamt I was a woodpecker. Oh, I'm really driving him home tonight.
You certainly are. Four more just got up to go. Come on, Joyce. Let's inspect the mirror of the week. What's new?
Well, on Friday, there's the British Bantam Association annual show at King's Lynn.
Bantams, eh? They're plucky little birds. I'd like to see a little fighting cock.
Then come on, cock. Your mum and dad are at it again.
Do Jimmy's parents quarrel then, Wal?
Oh, hammer and tongs. I remember one time when Jim's mum picked up a musical instrument and chucked it at his dad.
What musical instrument?
A piano. Oh, shocking display of temper. Young Jim didn't half go up in the air.
Why?
He was still sitting on it. Oh, come and learn a trade, Jim, like Harry Coates. He's fixed himself up fine. He's on the lava.
You mean he stands on a volcano?
No, lava, the stuff you shave with.
Oh.
Look, you know when you get a fresh peach, it skins all fuzzy. But when you get a tin peach, well, they're always clean shaven.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now, you don't think them peaches shave themselves, do you?
Well, I'm not sure of anything anymore.
Now, you see, that's Harry's job. He sits in the tinning factory, and all the fresh peaches is passed along to him. He puts each one in a little swivel chair, gets out his miniature razor, and shortens it with a special device.
On his own?
No, with his brother. And he put a little dab of lava on each rosy cheek, a quick once over with the razor, hot towel, dab of lotion, and then it... Next beat, please.
Oh, very interesting. I suppose the fuzz is thrown away.
Oh, no. That's where the money lies. Harry always says his fuzz is his fortune.
How so?
Well, he's got a pal in the Hebrides, see? And he weaves cloth. And this pal sends Harry down lengths of tweed. Harry takes all the little peach hairs and rubs them into the surface of the material. And this makes a cloth which is very popular among sporting gents.
Well, how do I get hold of some of this hairy material?
Well, it's easy. You just ask for Harry's tweed. Well, if you want to scrape a living, come on, Jim Edwards.
Mirror of the Week. We received news this week at the opening of a new airman's mess at Boscombe Downs. Well, this mess is said to rival any West End restaurant as regards comfort and luxury.
If this idea spreads throughout the RAF, will this be a typical dinner time scene?
Excuse me, chum. I've just been posted here. Smashing place, this dining hall, ain't it?
Yes, it's quite amusing. Did you notice the hand-painted Muriel?
Muriel?
Yes, you know, a lot of drawings on the wall. I bet you never seen that in a RAF before.
Well, I have, but not in the dining hall.
Here we are. This is our table. I always have my own waiter. Good evening, Corporal. What do you recommend?
Well, the chef says to try the specialty de la maison. Corned beef croquettes with gippo and our upstage.
Yes, I think so. What about you, chum? Would you prefer saucissons de Dieu?
What's that?
Bangers.
That'll do, Sergeant.
Good. Anything to drink, chum?
Oh, I never drink anything stronger than water.
Right, bring him one nappy beer. Well, hurry up, my man. Did you tell Extracto? We have an important appointment in half an hour. We've got a very important appointment with a tin of polish from the orderly room corridor.
All right, attention, everybody. Orderly officer. Orderly officer.
Oh, here, the orderly officer. Quick, sit up straight.
Ah, you don't want to worry about him, chum.
But ain't he come round for complaints?
Complaints? Get out. He's a blooming cabaret.
The ice dancing championships of Great Britain at Wembley on Sunday are a sign of the increasing popularity of the ice rink. Any afternoon, enthusiastic amateurs don their skates and dance to the sound of...
Oh, maybe. As I said to the manager, if you don't do something about the heating system here, you won't see me on your ice anymore. Oh, look, Mavis, there's that clever skater who demonstrated the flying split just now. No, over there, between the two St. John's ambulance men. You know, maybe, ice hockey players wear heavy padding over the vulnerable parts of the body. See, there's one in front. I'll just prod the padding like this to show... Oh, I do beg your pardon, madam. From the back, you look like a Wembley tiger. Oh, maybe today you are a veritable Sonia Hinds. Especially in that short velvet skirt with the warm knee-length comms. Ah, there is a friend of mine from the office. That fellow who keeps sitting down on the ice. I'll call him. Hi, Winterbottom.
A famous literary magazine pointed out this week that many well-known poets have taken to writing detective stories because there's no money in poetry anymore.
Tyfe, however, thinks that the poets should continue with their poetry by the simple device of putting the detective stories themselves into verse. A typical one might open like this.
It was just a week last Thursday in the office I was sitting. I was loading up a little gas, or should I say a gittin'. When suddenly through the open door in walked a luscious dame. She kissed me twice with both my ears and murmured,
"What's your name?"
"I'm a private eye."
"Then you're the guy. I want to solve my case. My husband's growing cold."
"How come?"
"He's been dead for 7 days."
"A murder. Baby, that's the sort of job on which I dote. I'll have to view the body."
"Oh, sure, I'll just slip off my coat."
She took me to a great big house with high walls like a prison.
"Well, here we are."
"Is this joint yours?"
"No, it ain't mine. It's his'n." "You'd better see the parlor. That's where Cosmo met his doom."
"Well, I always say the place to die is in the living room."
"He was poisoned with a dagger. Perhaps the butler heard the yell.
Oh, madam, was it you that rang?
No, Jeeves, it was the bell.
Now listen, Bud, when was it you first saw this guy was dead?
The moment when he gave up chasing housemaids round the bed. I did not do this awful crime, if that is what you're feeling.
Then just explain your footprint.
Where?
Up there, upon the ceiling.
I made them because I went to bed inside the chandelier.
But why did you have to sleep up there?
Because I'm a light sleeper, dear.
Gee, now I see the way that poor old Cosmo met his death. You must have fallen on the guy and knocked out all his breath. He died by some blunt instrument.
Which part of me is blunt?
Well, I ain't naming names, Mac, but the part ain't at the front.
You've solved the case.
My job is done with one thing left to say. We hope we've proved to any budding poets here today.
Just stick to sex and murder, boys, cause
rhyme does not pay.
Haven't I seen you somewhere before, you wonderful thing?
Come to think of it, wasn't it you who suddenly brought a breath of spring?
Wasn't our meeting binding?
Well.
Or do we need reminding?
Didn't we meet one evening at Tony's, and didn't we date up for lunch next day, or did we? Tell me, did we?
You tell me. Didn't we dine and do it up fine on a flagon of wine, and then both exchange phone numbers?
What was yours again?
Just to hello.
Well, I answered, remember?
Didn't we kiss, and wasn't this where our hearts caught fire?
And didn't we get some lovely ovation from all our relations
when they saw us together out everywhere?
Sure started talking.
For didn't they know we'd be the perfect pair?
Our grand sense of humor when rumor says it's really just a mild flirtation. Some flirtation.
But I was serious, John.
Oh.
And didn't we hit the high spot from seven, make every night heaven, then come home with the milkman?
I remember that milkman.
Still full of life.
Well, I was.
Threatened to part, but in our hearts knew we never could.
And
didn't we find a heavenly new kind of wonderful happiness just for two, my darling?
So hand in glove.
And didn't we find that perfect love?
Oh, goodbye, Dick!
Miss Nichols and Mr. Bentley, and greetings, gentlefolk. Our film today deals with King Arthur and his Knights of the Round Table, who laid the code of English chivalry. We all remember their famous pledge, and never make love in a wheat field, it goes against the grain. Yet, this film displays courage and romance at its best. Listen to this typical love scene at the premiere.
One kiss. One kiss, I beg.
Oh, no, no, I dare not.
I beg you one kiss. And another. And another.
Why don't you two in front shut up? I can't hear the picture.
Our leading lady is Miss Joy Nichols, who appears all week with Errol Flynn. Mr. Flynn is the type to make any girl appear all week. See Miss Nichols today as the lady of the lake, Lady Chloe.
The only man I fear is Merlin the Magician. He is so cunning at the black art, he can make 70 cigarettes from half an ounce of tobacco. We call him the Wizard of Half Oz. Oh, my brave knight on the rack. He is now 7 feet tall.
What's the matter with that?
Lord, you made the knight too long.
For the romantic lead, we have Richard Bentley. We always have to put him on a lead when he gets romantic. During the present cold spell, Mr. Bentley has taken to wearing a balaclava helmet. I wouldn't bother mentioning this except that he's the only person in England wearing a balaclava helmet, which he actually got at Balaclava. Today, he portrays the youngest of the round table knights.
They call me Sir Lancelot because every time I take a girl out, she learns a lot. But no task is too difficult for the knights of the round table. Sir Gawain put on his shining armor and kept vigil in the pouring rain. I'll call him in.
Hi, Rusty.
I myself play the part of King Arthur, a proud ruler, stern to the point of being bigoted. In fact, a bigoted Arthur, they call me. Yes, bigoted Arthur, that's me. So, ladies and gentlefolk, we present Knights at the Pin Table, or No Tilting.
The legend goes that one day King Arthur and his knights gathered at the round table deliberating. Then King Arthur spoke.
I twist. Egad, but. Ah, good my knights. You make a brave array. For inspection, horse and lances. You in the front row, look at yourself, you sloppy thing, dirty rivet.
My liege, I have but recently come here with my squires.
You're not Billy Reed.
Nay, sire, nay, I am Sir Lancelot, a very perfect gentle knight. I raised myself to be the flower of chivalry. I am the only self-raising flower.
You certainly look a little pasty. Look at your armor.
Good King Arthur, I know my armor is not as other warriors' raiment, but my mum's made it. She ran up a suit of armor for me out of ordinary household utensils.
But fancy using a saucepan as a helmet, particularly as the handle sticks out straight in front of you.
That's my nose. Good King Arthur, I crave a boon. As is the custom of the knights of the round table, I would like to be a ladies' champion.
Well, that's possible. I could make you ladies' snooker champion.
Nay, my liege, the custom is for a knight to fight in the name of the lady. She appoints him her champion, and he jousts to the death for her glory in the splendid tournament held annually. See footnote.
Oh, the research that goes into these programs. Get it all out of the children's encyclopedia. It is well, Lancelot. That's just to get out of your side, you see? Get yourself the lady. Get yourself a sword and visor. Jump off your chair now.
Right.
And also get yourself a stronger pair of braces. Off you go to the Lady Chloe.
That afternoon, I was seated in the top room of a turret overlooking Camelot, embroidering a medieval sampler which read, "Never make love in the wheat field. Your friends will only chaff." Suddenly, I noticed somebody walking across the drawbridge. This intrigued me because the drawbridge was up at the time. He came nearer.
I'm sorry to sneak up on you like this. I am indeed sorry, fair Lady Chloe. I came here for a purpose.
To wit?
To woo.
But who are you? With your hot little face peering out of all that aluminium, you look like a pressure cooker.
Nay, nay, fair lady, speak not thus. Mock not my habiliment. I am girt in armor.
Well, sit down, girt, and take your armor off.
Oh, fair lady, I...
Why do you keep saying fair lady?
Well, I used to be a bus conductor.
Well, I must request you to stop. No man speaks thus to the proud Lady Chloe.
But, my lady, I wish to be your champion. Set me a task that I may do battle for your name, that I may prove worthy to bash in your smile.
The word is bath.
Oh. Yes. Let me slay a dragon for you. Let me fight a terrible duel or a shocking warrior. Yes, I am yours to command. I take my helmet off in homage.
Your helmet off?
Spicer, you are getting bold.
Oh, no, just a bit thin on the top.
My lady, say me not nay.
Tiswell, I am taken by your spirit, sir. I bid you challenge the dreaded Black Knight, who has slain the best of King Arthur's followers.
I'll do it, and once I have my fighting armor on, I shall fight with the strength of two men.
How so?
Well, I'll have another bloke in there with me. See you at the tournament.
Well, here we are at Avalon, and we've had a really grand week of sport with a different knight every day. Over at the pavilion, King Arthur is deliberating with his knights of the round table.
I tell you what I'll do. I'll take fights upon on Lancelot.
Ah, the beauteous Lady Chloe approaches. All right, lads, tagged out and smartened up. Come on, bag the swank. Good lady, thou art out of countenance. Thou showest no sign of cheer.
What cheer, gentlemen?
What cheer, Chloe?
Black Mark, Galahad!
Consider yourself on the fizzer. Why so sad, good Lady Chloe?
I worry for Sir Lancelot. He is pitted against the greatest of your warriors. Poor Lancelot. He still has the down of youth on his cheeks.
The only thing down on his cheeks are the bags under his eyes. See, Lancelot comes now. He looks anxious.
Oh, what can ail thee, knight at arms, alone and palely loitering?
I've lost me lance. My mum has been using it to prop up the clothesline. I must get a spear or something. King Arthur, hast thou an old battle axe?
Nay, I am a bachelor. But you may borrow my mighty sword of which the poets have written.
Is it Excalibur?
No, ex-government surplus. Now, Lancelot, the Black Knight is mounting his charger. Go thee and battle with him till one of you drops lifeless.
Lifeless? Look, couldn't we just carry on till one of us gets a nosebleed?
No, 'tis to the death. That is the rule of the game, according to the great British historian Hoylake.
Well, we ain't playing this game according to Hoylake. We play this game according to me.
Now, Lancelot, into battle. Oh, Lancelot, you've won. You ran your spear clean through the Black Knight and galloped straight up to me.
Oh, Chloe, through the blackest night, I gotta go where you are. Now, my lady, my reward. I claim the kiss you pledged.
Yes, Lady Chloe, take him into the wheat field.
But what about your famous motto?
It doesn't apply anymore.
Why can we make love in a wheat field?
Because we've come to the end of the corn.
Frank, I'm telling the old Mickey BBC review officer to bring our show to a close. Those involved were Joy Nichols, Dick Bentley, and Professor Jimmy Edwards, encouraged by Wally Peetham, Alan Dean, and the keynote. Frank Muir and Dennis Norden wrote the script, and the program was produced by Charles Maxwell. Joy, Dick, and Jimmy invite you to tune in next week, and...